Welcome to you all to this day retreat. Lovely to see again many familiar faces and friends, and also new faces who I'm sure some of you who I don't necessarily know have been here before, but imagine there's also those who are here for the very first time and perhaps engaging in meditation practice for the first time. So an extra welcome to you, as it can sometimes be a little daunting to come into an unusual or strange situation, and just like to say a little bit about what we'll be engaging in today. And as I begin, just reminding myself, but please remind me if you can't hear me, if I'm speaking too quietly or if my accent is rather hard for you to distinguish, I can speak more slowly and clearly and loudly if needed. So please let me know. I'd really like to know if you can't comprehend or understand me. If you can't understand what I'm saying, that's something else. I'll try and work on that too. No guarantees. So there's kind of two elements today, which is the essentially spending a day in silence and meditation. And then there's the theme that I'd like to focus on and explore. In terms of spending a day in meditation, to take this time, and you've done so, to step out of what you might otherwise have been doing with a Sunday, and there are probably many things that could have claimed this day, but the intention to come and spend time on retreat, to it's really an offering of space to oneself, giving oneself some space. There's nothing in a retreat that you come to get. It's more like in being here, you allow yourself an opportunity, I would suggest, to more fully and deeply experience where you are, what you are, who you are. And allow yourself to arrive in that more consciously and more fully. And so, being in silence is an opportunity to be with yourself. And if you've not done it before, not spent a day in silence before, I'd really invite you to take it in that way. This is an opportunity to be with yourself, but in the company and with the support of others. So it's not about somehow having to pretend that nobody else is there, but nor yet having to rely upon the habitual interaction and engagement that we are familiar with as a way of somehow establishing ourselves or our sense of okayness. To see if that can be found within, to know what is true, and to be able to rest with the simplicity of our experience. And so, being in silence for the day, that means, yes, turning off, putting away your cell phones, and just being aware of your whole relationship to language, actually. Sometimes we have the feeling we want to read and write, and on a day like this, I'd encourage you to minimize, if not actually completely let it go. In fact, I'd encourage you to let it go. You don't need to read or write too much at all. If you want to record or have access to what's being said during the day, this will all be, is being recorded and will be posted for free access on the web. So you don't need to record anything right now. And I'd invite you to really let yourself listen fully. If the writing down seems to help you listen, that's okay, but may not be necessary. So that in stepping away from the world of language and words, we perhaps have the opportunity to attune to something that is understood in a language that is not conceptual, understood in a mode of a frame of reference that is not defined in the conceptual world. And this is quite a shift for most of us. It's not an easy thing to do. And so the familiarity and the security of being able to analyze and describe and encapsulate our experience with our words is one that we, I think, don't find it easy to let go of. But so far as you can, it's a real gift to yourself. And so, as part of giving yourself space, coming on retreat in that way, being on retreat for this day means to have the opportunity to step away from the habits and patterns and activities of our lives that don't truly conduce or support our well-being. That's what we're retreating from. We're not retreating from life. Life is here in its fullness and unstoppableness. And so stepping away from that which isn't supportive or skillful or conducive to the wholesome, that's what we mean by retreating. And stepping into a space where our focus for this day is upon the development, the cultivation, and the discovery of that which is wholesome, that which is conducive or contributing to the well-being of ourselves and our world and others also. And so from my point of view, this is really what the day is about. Learning what it means to step away from that which is not supportive or skillful, and to support and enhance, develop that which is. And we'll be engaging in this process through the tools of insight meditation and the teachings of Buddha Dharma, originated 2,500 years ago. And that, with some moderate degree of translation, are still rather accessible and effective today. Because they speak very much to what it means to be a human being, to be alive, to face the reality that we are only here for a certain amount of time, not forever. And that in this time we have, it seems, both the potential for incredible conflict and struggle and pain, and equally the potential for immense beauty and nobility and wonderful goodness, and the capacity to truly understand what it means to be free and to be connected in the midst of our life. And so engaging in a retreat is to engage with that potential, to orient one's life and one's intentions towards that possibility, the opening and the awakening of the heart and mind. So the other aspect of the day that I just mentioned that's supportive and useful is a sense of simplicity. Don't bring too many expectations here. Don't bring too many projects. If you can leave anything like that behind, if there's something you thought you had to do today on this retreat, probably you don't actually have to do it. So give yourself the space to simply receive what comes and trust that that's actually what is most important. And so we'll be engaging in meditation practice, which is essentially the art of bringing an open, interested and engaged attention to our experience. And through the refining and the focusing of that attention, being able to both see into our experience and open to it, so that we begin to drop our resistance to the way things are, and we equally begin to comprehend what is most true. And in both of those processes, which may sound and look a little different, but they're essentially the same, understanding and opening. I tend to think of understanding as something of the mind, and opening perhaps as something of the heart, but in the end, heart and mind are not so separate as we imagine. In the process of understanding the way things are and opening to them, we access our potential for transformation, for transforming our lives, our hearts, our minds, and equally transforming this world of which we are a part. And so this is essentially what meditation practice is concerned with. It's not about producing a particular experience. And the tendency to want to measure or evaluate our experience, which is rather common, is, so far as you can, one that could be usefully let go of for today and beyond that, in fact, but certainly for today. And this is really an expression of the theme which I'd just like to touch on a little at this time. attachment and letting go. It's easy to come with an agenda into life, it seems, or into the day, into our experience, into our meditation, into our relationships, to come with an agenda. And while there's a real value and necessity in having a certain orientation, like understanding what it is we value and in which direction we would wish to travel, and hopefully that would be something of valuing well-being, valuing peace, valuing happiness, valuing freedom, valuing truth, maybe different ways we'd express it, and that the orientation for one's life may be towards bringing more of that into one's life or one's world. While that orientation is incredibly important, when we start to set fixed or absolute markers as where I must get to in this way of travel, how far or how fast I must journey in this direction, this easily becomes the basis for conflict when we don't fulfill our expectation or our hope. And so this is really a reflection of the territory of attachment. There are many things that are of value and of benefit, but to have a skillful relationship to them is to understand that we cannot always produce the results we wish for in life, certainly not according to our timescale or our agenda. And learning to live within that reality skillfully, not abandoning the aspiration for the wholesome, the noble, the beautiful, but nor yet demanding results in some way that conflicts with your reality. It's the basic and foundation teaching of Buddha Dharma that attachment, grasping, a sense of holding on to a position or a goal or an experience, that this, or an identity, this is the basis of suffering, of bondage, of limitation. And letting go of attachment is the basis of freedom. This is the core of the Buddha's teaching. Understanding what this means and how to live this, of course, is a life's journey, perhaps many lives. But what we will encounter, I think, most of us, when we hear this, and if we look inside, is that we can have a very strongly conditioned view in ourselves that says happiness and satisfaction, the end of suffering, comes from some form of materialism, some form of attainment, of getting something. And there's three levels in which this arises. We can think of getting happiness through possessions. If we have the right house, the right car, the right clothes, the right sort of latest model of personal sort of computer or cell phone, that this will make us happy. And clearly the sort of commercial world has quite an investment in convincing us of this, and I imagine that none of you would be here if you really believed it, because you're not going to get any more of those things while you're here, and you know that. So this one I suspect we've all seen through to a significant degree. No, it can sometimes be nonetheless a little attractive when we find ourselves contemplating some new item we could acquire. So this is the first level, getting possession. The second level, a little more subtle, is the view that we have that gaining experiences will be what makes us happy. That having certain kinds of experiences will bring satisfaction. Like if I can have certain mind states or certain meditative experiences in my, or certain bodily feelings, this will be the happiness I seek. And I think for some, and it can be in meditation, there's the attempt to get the experiences we want, to make ourselves have some blissful feeling or some peaceful, chilled out experience. And of course such experiences can and do arise on occasion in meditation, and yet they don't sustain. There is no experience which lasts. Having arisen, they pass. This again is foundation teaching of Dharma. And so again, I suspect that at least for those of you who've practiced some meditation, we get the idea, we start to say, oh, maybe there's no particular experience or collection of experiences which will do it for me, which is going to solve this conundrum of being a human being and what that demands of me or asks of me. But we can notice perhaps how in meditation practice there can be a tendency to be trying to have a particular experience. Usually because we think that when I have that experience, things are going to get better and stay that way. And maybe I'll even get to the experience where things are finally finished and I can stop and relax and, you know, hang out in enlightened retirement. It's kind of attractive. I imagine we could sell a few more tickets if we were advertising it that way. But it's not really about that. This is a form of materialism, the idea that something is going to do it for me. Getting some kind of experience is going to do it for me. The third and most subtle and most challenging aspect or expression of materialism is the belief that in becoming someone we will find happiness. Becoming a particular kind of someone, a someone who's like this and not like that, a someone who is filled with loving kindness, wisdom and a sweet smile, that becoming that person, that someone, is going to be our happiness or our salvation or our liberation. And this is kind of a little harder to get because it sounds like, but oh yeah, that makes sense. Isn't that what this is all about? In a certain way, of course, wisdom and loving kindness are essentially what we are learning and cultivating on the spiritual journey. But becoming someone who is the owner of that is not what this is about. Because that whole sense of trying to become someone is the fundamental and core attachment that creates suffering, which the Dharma teachings point to as the territory of the letting go that finally liberates the heart. This is the territory. And so I'll speak to and point to some of these areas, various points in the day perhaps, and certainly later in the day when I'll speak for a little longer on this theme. But just really wanting to mention it, to touch on it for now, to let that be a framework of what we'll be doing. A sense of, are we here trying to get somewhere or get something or become someone? Because so far as we're doing that, certainly so far as we're doing it intentionally and consciously, we're not practicing the Dharma. So far as it's happening unconsciously and unintentionally, our Dharma practice is to understand that, to see that clearly, and to recognize that in letting it go, we free ourselves, we liberate ourselves. Initially, it seems by degrees, but ultimately, to discover freedom, this is what's required. And really just to kind of summarize that whole piece rather more simply, as it was once done by Jack Kornfield, who is a senior teacher in our lineage from California. He once commented, people come on retreats thinking it's like the store, like somewhere you can go and get things, but it's not. This is a dump. You come here to get rid of and let go of what you don't need anymore. That's just cluttering up your attic or your house or your life. And I think that's kind of a healthy way to hold it. Perhaps maybe more useful to think of it being the recycling centre, because not to sort of judge or blame ourselves for what we need to let go of. It's not that it's bad that it's there, but that it's inviting us to learn and to let go. And when I say this, I just want to emphasize, in speaking about attachment, and as I've been doing and will do, there is a usage of that same word in Western psychology, attachment, referring to the establishment of a healthy connection and bond, for instance, between the mother and child, or in life, and a sense of having relationship that is wholesome and nourishing. And this is not the same thing. there is something appropriate about being able to connect and establish a healthy relationship. This is not about non-attachment in that regard. And I'll speak to that a little more, I think, as we go along, perhaps, if I remember. The effect of attachment is that it puts pressure upon. It puts pressure upon one's experience, it puts pressure upon others, it puts pressure upon ourselves. The effect of attachment is pressure. Connection doesn't create pressure. It actually releases pressure. So that's how experientially one could distinguish them, even though the language might be similar. That which generates pressure limits and ultimately binds our heart, our mind, our life. And so, out of compassion for ourselves and for this world, we would wish to release the pressure, the limitation, the bondage. And so, we engage in meditation practice. This is most of what we'll be doing today. I'd just like to give some instructions now for some sitting meditation. Is there anyone who's not done any sitting meditation before? Who has complete beginner to what it means to do this? Okay. Anyone who's a relative beginner? Fine to be a relative beginner. Great. Wonderful. Good. Okay. Just gives me a sense of how to frame this. Okay. There's a couple more cushions here if anyone needs an extra cushion or even a mat to sit on if someone wants. You're welcome. And there's even space up here if you'd like it. So it's useful to be relatively comfortable in meditation. It's not possible to be absolutely comfortable. But at least to have a posture that supports your practice and which reflects the basic qualities of heart and mind which we're supporting and cultivating through meditation. And so starting off by allowing yourself to be grounded, to feel the contact of your body with the earth that supports us, that holds us up. Feeling bottom on the seat or cushion or bench, knees on the or feet on the ground. If you're in a chair, put your feet on the ground if you can, rather than crossing your legs. If you're on a cushion and one of your knees is kind of hanging up in the air, put something under it to support it so you're grounded. You're not kind of loose, floating around. Then establishing a sense of uprightness in the torso. So the space between the pelvis and the breastbone, the sternum is extended. So the abdomen is open and the torso is upright. And so the shoulders can relax and the shoulder blades can begin to soften and sort of head south, we could say. Head home if you come from where I come from. Just noticing what it's like to feel your spine upright. Not pushing too hard into the small of the back, not hyperextending that gentle curve, but nor collapsing it by leaning forward. So the small of the back is gently curved. Torso is upright. Just feeling that up through the neck and head, a sense of extension through the crown of the head. And with that uprightness through the core of your body, relaxing. Relaxing around it. So that everything that doesn't need to be holding you up isn't trying to. So that includes your face. Face doesn't need to hold you up. Notice if there's tension in the eyelids, around the cheek or jaw. Just breathing out, relaxing. Likewise, noticing if there's tension in the neck or the shoulders. Allowing that to release by simply inviting that possibility, breathing out into that area. Without forcing it or trying to make it happen. Just inviting what is possible. And so far as there's still some tension felt there, letting that be. Letting it be okay. So, stable and grounded, upright and alert, relaxed and at ease. Coming into this immediacy of experience right here. For now, releasing the interest we have in the past and in the future. Not needing to find the solution to our life and our history, or the resolution of our hopes and our fears in the future. But coming into the conscious contact with this moment, right here and now, this is where our life is to be found, and nowhere else. Coming into contact with this immediate experience, feeling what it's like to be sitting here in your body, alert and yet relaxed. And noticing the experience of the breathing as it moves in your body. Noticing the flow of breath that travels into the nostrils, down into the torso, through the throat and chest, and belly, and ripples back up from there, belly, chest, throat, and nostrils. However that experience is for you right now, beginning to attune your attention to this, receiving the experience just as it is. If you can't feel or sense anything, particularly if you're new to meditation using the breath, it's okay to just bring your hand to your belly or chest and make contact with that region. You may find that will help you sense the experience of the breathing. And you can keep it there so long as that's useful, if you wish. But you don't have to do this. And just noticing the breathing experience as it is. And however it is, maybe rough or smooth, it may be long or short, it may be deep or shallow, allowing it to be as it is, and experiencing it consciously, gathering your attention, and resting it in the experience of breathing. Breathing in. Breathing out. You may notice the pull of the mind, thoughts, its energy, its activity, the call of the past and the future. Letting that go when you notice it arises in your mind, without judging or criticizing the fact that it has occurred, not regarding it as a problem or even an obstacle, but simply a phenomena, an experience, which for now you do not need to give energy to. Noticing if there are sounds that come to your attention, sensations elsewhere in your body, or perhaps feelings, emotional processes that arise, images that occur in the mind's eye. When such experiences arise, simply notice that they have arisen. Again, not treating them as a problem. They are simply an experience that comes and will pass. They may be pleasurable or unpleasant. Simply let them be as they are. They may be neutral. Likewise, simply notice that. They're neither pleasant nor unpleasant. And then bring your attention back to the breath. So in focusing the attention on the breath as the primary object, we're not excluding everything else. We're simply directing our attention, collecting it and focusing it, using the breath. And yet understanding that in attending to the breath, all things are equally revealed. Without having to look for them, simply looking to the breath as the ground and the focus, which is always there for you. From the first in-breath that we take when we're born, till the last out-breath leaves the body at the time of death, breathing as a companion. So establishing this relationship, mindful presence, connected, open, interested, just one breath at a time, just one moment at a time. As we engage in meditation practice, we can understand this as a training of the heart and the mind, a cultivating of a certain capacity that is inherent, that is natural, but that is somewhat obscured by our habitual ways of engaging and relating. And I think it's helpful to understand it in this way because we can see then that we're not trying to produce something in that materialistic sense. We're not here to gain something. But to understand what it is that obscures and to let that go. That the clarity and the openness that we may seek is not something we need to produce, but which we need to understand and thereby learn how to access. And so this basic orientation towards how we fulfill what seems meaningful for us, whether through gaining or through releasing. Materialism suggests gaining, Dharma suggests releasing. And what does that look like? We're not really developing concentration here. If you think you're getting concentrated, that's what we talk about. I'm going to get concentrated. It sounds like I've got to get that thing. And it's really hard to get it because there's all these other things going on in my head saying, well, that's a nice idea. Let's get concentrated. But hey, would you shut up? I'm trying to get concentrated. The mind trying to get concentrated doesn't succeed. If we understand that what we're doing is letting go of distractedness, we're letting go of reactiveness, then the mind settles. Because when we see distractedness arise, we say, ah, that's not what I'm here for. I can let that go. When we see reactivity arising, we can say, ah, actually, that's not necessary right now. I can let that go. As we begin to let go of distractedness, the natural stability and collectedness of the mind begins to show forth. We begin to experience and recognize it. It takes a little time, needs some patience. Not something to be forced. And its absence is not something to be judged, but simply to be recognized. And so to balance that sense of clearly engaging with your intention to let go, with an allowing, letting go of an agenda at how, of, with regard to how quickly or how efficiently or how completely one should let go in this moment. We can only ever let go as much as we can. And it's not something we do. It's something that happens when we recognize that this is actually the path to freedom. And that holding on is suffering. And then it really makes sense. We don't need to do it. It simply happens. As if when we're holding something hot, we realize this is burning. We don't think, oh, shall I let it go? No, we just let it go. If we're holding something, we think, this is really valuable. We don't let it go, even though it might be burning. So we need to understand this. We're asked to let go in practice of the identification with thinking and dwelling, with the intellectual mind as the source or the solution to our problems. It's neither the source of our problem nor the solution to our problem. We start off in a worldly way thinking mind will solve all the problems, and look where the world has got to on that basis. And then we come into meditation and think, now mind is all the problem, got to get rid of that. We don't get any further with that approach. Letting go of mind as the source, thinking mind as the source or the solution to the problem. Mind can be used in different ways. So be clear with that. I'm speaking to the thinking mind, intellectual capacity, which has its place and its limitations. But learning to let that go means coming back into the immediate experience, the unmediated experience, putting nothing between us and our experience, which is where thought tends to live, in the space between what we could call the immediacy of conscious, mindful awareness and experience. Thought seems to live in the space between them. And if we live in thought, we inhabit neither that quality of presence nor that direct experience. So we learn to step out of it here in practice. In cultivating wisdom and compassion, we're not producing those qualities. We're learning to see where their blindness that obscures wisdom resides within us, and to let it go. We're learning to understand where the reactivity, the fear, and the negativity that obscures kindness and compassion, where that operates and how that operates, and let it go. And as we do so, wisdom and compassion are naturally revealed as the innate qualities of the awakened heart and mind, not something we ever produce. We don't need to produce them. So again, that gaining mind orientation. If we see it, can we let it go? Letting go of our reactivity. How we want things to be pleasant and not unpleasant. How we resist the pleasant and resist the unpleasant and grasp the pleasant. Just connect from the neutral. Can we let that go? That resistance, that grasping, or that indifference, disconnection, takes us away. Creates a distance between consciousness and the immediacy of experience. So we learn to see it and let it go. And letting go of the idea that we're going to get something from this. That deeper attachment that I am looking for something out of this. What would it be to practice with no hope of getting anything? What would that be like? How would that change your day today? If today you had no hope of getting anything, of gaining anything, would you be here still? I hope you might be. Because you know, the Buddha once said, I gained absolutely nothing in complete, perfect, unexcelled enlightenment. That is why it is complete, perfect, unexcelled enlightenment. So, let us practice simply being present. Establish in a body posture that is upright, alert, stable, and yet relaxed. Allowing the mind to be equally grounded, engaged, and yet at ease. Attuning your attention to the breathing experience as the basis for being connected with where you are, and as the framework from which you can more clearly see each moment's experience. Not making any experience into a problem, nor into the solution, but simply life revealed moment by moment. Can we be that simple, that immediate? Wholehearted and yet without demand or expectation. Breath by breath, moment by moment. Simply being present with just this.